You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on hoopfeed.com. And we're maybe a half dozen games, maybe a few more into the college basketball season. There's already been a bunch of surprises, a bunch of teams that have been intriguing. So I figured at this point, as we head into the holidays and the end of the new year, at the end of 2014, it would be a good time to just take a quick look at what's been going on. And I've got two people with me tonight that are, you know, I've always called Debbie Antonelli the hardest working woman in basketball. You know, Brenda Van Langen is making a run at the title. The two of them both are everywhere. Guys, welcome to the show. It's great to have both of you back on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, David. I always enjoy being on your show. It's great to be on the show with Brenda.
I'm enjoying it, too, and I'll be second place to Debbie's crazy schedule anytime. She is all over the place, that's for sure.
Deb, the first thing I wanted to just start with you. I mean, we have not really had much of an opportunity on the podcast to discuss the incredible basketball game and event that was Lauryn Hill's first game as a collegiate player, and you know, you were heavily involved in that, and I just wanted to talk about that game for a second and what that atmosphere was like. It seemed like it was very special to be at.
It was incredibly special, and it was by far the most difficult thing I have ever done professionally. I was on the call of many of Coach Yao's games towards the end for her, and I had a 30-year relationship with Coach Al, but this was unlike anything I had ever experienced. The crowd was incredible. Lauryn's spirit certainly carried through, but I kept saying, if you only remember this moment, you've missed the whole point about what Lauryn's message is. And I've had a lot of people ask me how I was able to stay composed during the game, and I kept thinking, I had gotten some great advice from a producer friend of mine that said, you have to be the bridge and the connector. If you get emotional, I have a 19-year-old son. I've got three boys. I've got situations at my house involving my children. And if you don't connect her message and be the bridge, you will have failed Lauryn. Do you want to fail Lauryn? I said, no, I do not. Then you have to keep it together and you have to tell her message. And I hope over the course of the 2 hours, because basketball was certainly the backdrop to the story, that people got the message that you can make a difference if you will get involved. And Lauryn is such a special young woman. I've never met anybody like her.
And Brenda, you know, you were watching from afar. You were very active in social media through the entire thing, talking about what was going on and helping to spread the word and retweets and such. And, you know, what were your thoughts as you were watching this whole thing unfold?
You know, I was just so inspired by everything. And, you know, first was aware of the story. I think Jay Billis had tweeted about a month prior about the attempt to get the game moved so that she would have a better opportunity to participate. So I was following the story from that time, and just everything I read about her and heard from her, Lauryn, I was so inspired. And, you know, Debbie did a tremendous job on the broadcast of being that bridge and helping to relay her message, because, you know, Lauryn is just an incredibly inspirational person, and, you know, that we would all have that sort of courage faced with what she's facing. And she has inspired so many of us and strengthened so many of us. And, you know, as much as I could use whatever platforms to get the word out about her and her story, you know, I wanted to try to do that as much as possible. But just an amazing woman, amazing event that was able to come together to honor her. And, you know, she and her family continue to be in my prayers as she battles.
You know, that's the perfect way to just top this conversation off on it. I mean, there is no segue that we can do out of that. So we'll just, you know, wish, of course, the best to Lauryn and her family at this time of year and as they go forward. And, you know, let's get back to what we try and do best on the podcast, and that's talk about some hoops. And, Deb, you've been very active early on, and you will be often with Dawn Staley in South Carolina with broadcasts. And, you know, they had a close one the other day with Duke, but they're rolling along. They're 8-0, and you win. That's what number one teams do, right?
That's right. You find a way, and that's exactly what South Carolina did in a house at Cameron that was more than 50% Gamecock fans. I think when you talk about the success that Dawn has built at South Carolina, there's a lot of success you can measure on the court. But off the court, they're leading the nation in attendance right now. It's quite the atmosphere there. And the thing that they have, that you have to be able to win the national championship and to challenge Connecticut, because you still have to beat Connecticut, is you got to be able to score from all five positions. They check that off. You can score inside 10 seconds on the shot clock. They've got a bailout player in Tiffany Mitchell, and they've also got some post players that can score late in the shot clock if a team takes them deep. You know, they can make a play off the bounce. They can close down space. They've got several players that can do that. They're very good one-on-one defenders, but they also have great rim protectors, and they're deep in the post, and that allows them to play a little bit more aggressively and up the line. They haven't played outside of Duke and Syracuse as challenging of a schedule as I think that Dawn would have liked to have played, but it's just the way it laid out. You know, as you're building your program, sometimes you make commitments far out, and that is probably the case right now with South Carolina, but they look good, they're healthy, they're hungry, they're not ducking any expectation, and they're stepping up to the plate, so to speak.
It has been impressive so far, but, you know, if there is one theme so far to the season, I would say, and that is incomplete, and that is every team is definitely looking like they're building, they're growing, but nobody looks totally complete and ready to roll like sometimes the Connecticut teams or the Notre Dame teams or somebody in the past has done. Each team is definitely a work in process, and South Carolina certainly falls into that category, but, you know, Brenda, down in that old Big 12 neck of woods and also SEC now because of where it is, three teams in the top 10 from the state of Texas, including the University of Texas, and how cool is that to see the University of Texas rolling along at number 3?
Well, you know, Karen Aston and her staff have worked really hard to get this team to where they are, and you know, it's pretty amazing the recruiting efforts over the last few years and the discipline that's been brought to the program as well that have kind of helped them accelerate this quickly. And yeah, they look pretty strong. I mean, you know, so many of the things that Debbie described in what South Carolina brings to the table, Texas has, you know, some great guard play, and it's, you know, those players that have played together now for 3 years, Empress Davenport and Selena Rodrigo, that are a big part of that, I think. And then you've got the size inside, and besides Nneka Enampali and the athleticism that she brings and her pounding on the boards, Kelsey Lang has been a pretty nice surprise for them how well she worked in the offseason to get ready, because they've needed her. With McGee Stafford out with the injury still. What I've heard is that they're planning for McGee Stafford to be back by conference season, but I think that's still in question. And Kelsey Lang has filled in really, really well. And then you bring in Arielle Atkins, you know, top guard in the country, and what she's able to add. It's just that, you know, what Karen has done over the last couple of years with the discipline that she's implored and the depth that she's developed. Everybody has that depth thing as a motivator, because if they aren't doing their job or aren't doing what they're supposed to do, they're going to be behind them working hard at it. And I think that's how it's been built up.
Now, the other one I want to mention out there in particular is Texas A&M and the job that Gary Blair has done so far. Yeah, this is a team that also was able to take on Duke and beat them, again, without Elizabeth Williams. Though, Deb, you know, since it's SEC country with Texas A&M, I guess, you know, this is another team that is very strong, that is actually, I think, is surprised a little bit the way that they've come out this season. I didn't expect them to be this good this early. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen with a Gary Blair team. You always got to wonder if they're going to be there in the Final Four candidate.
I would stack Gary Blair up in a late-game situation against anybody in the country. I think he is that good, and as long as his team is within striking distance towards the end of the game, which they usually are, He has the ability to make plays and to call and to direct the right kind of offense to get his team in the right place. I call it dial-it-up scoring because that's exactly what Gary can do. He can bring dial-it-up scoring, and that means that he can call out what he wants and they can execute it. But I thought their perimeter was going to be really good. I had them high in my AP poll early. I didn't know that Williams was going to be out for disciplinary reasons, but they're just starting to put it together, and I think they're a team that's going to continue to get better. And I do want to say about Texas, Brenda's absolutely right. What Karen did is bring a consistent message and a discipline that, you know, you were going to be rewarded if you did things the right way. And I think that's the way to go about doing it. But, you know, I do have to say this one thing about Texas. There was a coach between Jody and Karen, and that was Gail Gestenkors for 5 years that was there. And although she may not have been the right fit, you can't just dismiss the 5 years that was there. You know, a lot of people just go right on by and say, you know, Karen has replaced the legend. Well, there was a five-year span of time there that Gail did take Texas to the NCAA tournament every year. Now, they didn't have the success that they had all wanted to have. Let's hope that Karen can have that kind of success, that because I do think Karen is the right fit and has shown that she is a terrific coach and has done a great job there, very well prepared to take on the Texas program.
The thing about Texas
go ahead. Oh, I was just going to add to that. That's a really good point. And the fact that, you know, Gail brought in some, you know, as she is known for throughout her career, some top-notch players and really the foundation class of this group that Karen is coaching, you know, were the talented players in the state of Texas that kind of set the foundation. And, you know, I think that you know, when Karen took over, there were some issues that had to be addressed as far as, you know, I think there were some players, and I think Gail had to deal with this, being an athlete at the University of Texas, sometimes there's this sense of entitlement. And I think, you know, even in Gail's time when she stepped aside, she said that she was worn down by some of the stuff that she had to deal with. And I think when Karen came in and basically, you know, I got a chance to do their game at Kansas that first year that Karen Aspen was there. And she left her two best players behind in Chastity Fizell and NECA and Impali her first year and basically suspended them from the team and lost the game by about 40 points and sent the message to everybody on the team, you follow these rules or you're not going to play. And she's, you know, kind of used that hard-edged discipline approach. And it's, you know, the people, there have been people that have left the program, but the ones that have stayed, I think, are stronger because of it. And that all goes together.
And what I love, what I love about the program in Texas, what they're doing right now is you look at the roster and you touched on it, is it is Texas, Texas, Texas. She's getting them to stay home. And, you know, that's such a fruitful area for basketball. And to be able to get them to stay and stay at the University of Texas, you know, you should succeed if you have that type of talent and you can get them there. And that's one thing that Karen has done and is certainly something that is going to be something that's going to be a key to that team to develop a longevity in the success that they're having right now. There was a little, you know, I don't know if you guys heard, but there was a little game this weekend, too. I mean, I guess this Connecticut team is pretty good, and they played a Notre Dame team that's supposed to be pretty hot, too. You know, Deb, it's supposed to be all about offense. How about Jewel Wood?
It's offense, man. I've been telling you guys it's all about offense. People are starting to finally realize. Look what Princeton did to Michigan. You know, Princeton had three players that got under 6 minutes in my 100-shot challenge, Brenda, just so you know, by the way. No one else did. So they can score. It's about offense. The way the game is being officiated is for the fans and the players. This is the way you want to play the game, and Jewel Lloyd is fantastic. She can make every play. There's not a play she can't make, and she can make plays on the defensive end. That's what makes her so exciting. Connecticut is really good. I watched them for 3 days in Naples over Thanksgiving. I watched them improve every day, and the things that Gino was stressing to his team about defensive intensity and finding a leader and, you know, they're just making people playing their roles and doing their roles a little bit better than they have been doing them. I mean, they are going to be there at the end. There's no question in my mind that they are still going to be the team, with, along with South Carolina right now. Those two, for sure, I can see being Final Four teams. I cannot tell you right now who I think the next two are, and that is great for us to be, for me to be able to feel that way as long as I've been in the game. We had 8 losses in the top 10 in November. That hasn't happened since 1999. People talk about parity all the time. Because of the way the game is being officiated and the court is opening up, if you are a player listening to David's podcast and you got a chance to get an extra 100 shots up every day, please do it, because it will matter. Tiffany Mitchell is a perfect example of that. Brenda, in the Duke game, she played terrible. She couldn't get a shot off. She's got to get used to being the target of the best defensive player. But when the game was on the line, Tiffany Mitchell has confidence. She's put in the work. She works harder than any other player. She made that big three. It was huge. And Dawn put the ball in her hands late. I mean, that's what you're talking about when you're talking about parity and offense and Jewel Lloyd dropping 31 and, you know, Nina Davis. I don't even know if Nina Davis has a 15-foot jump shot. But she works, and she goes off the bounce, and she gets to the glass, and she's undersized. She's got an incredible heart. Because of the way the game is officiated, players like Nina Davis can be successful and help their team in the top 10. It's exciting.
It is. It is. And, you know, that's what, you know, all those upsets early, I mean, it all started, you know, the dominoes started to fall with Stanford beating UConn. And then just, I think, and I've heard you say this before, and I was tweeting the same thing. I think everybody kind of felt the same way, that when UConn was beaten, it gave everybody else hope. And then you've seen that throughout the upsets that have happened. You know, both Texas and North Carolina turn around and beat Stanford. But then you have teams like Illinois beating Kentucky and Washington State beating Maryland, and, you know, and on down the line. And that is the inconsistent play of, you know, pre-conference, the non-conference schedule. Some of it is teams that they haven't built up the resistance to facing adversity yet. So later in the season, when you're down by 10, you can point back to a game earlier in the season and you can say, hey, remember when we were down by 10 and we overcame that, we got the win? Well, they don't have that collective team memory right now. So when things go bad, not all teams are able to handle it in the non-conference, and you've seen teams kind of have those inconsistencies or not play well when they get punched in the mouth, so to speak, early. But it has created some excitement, you know, because of the upsets and the offense that's being played, and just, you know, at this point, there's no coach that can go into a locker room that won't be able to say, hey, it's been done. We can go be anybody. And that's kind of what's brought a new excitement, I think, to this season.
You know, if you look right now, there's 30-plus players averaging over 20 points a game. Now, granted, of course, it is early, but there's everything from freshmen like Kelsey Mitchell at Ohio State averaging 26 points a game, and you've got Nita Davis, like you said, as a sophomore, who's 22 points a game. It really has been an offensive explosion in a lot of ways, but I do want to ask a question going the other way, and Brenda, I'll address this to you. The teams that we discussed at the top, South Carolina, Connecticut, Texas, they all have bigs that defend the basket, that defend the rim. And, you know, I have to think that still is going to be a prime factor in April as to what we're going to see down the stretch there. Is the ability to defend the front of the rim.
You know, those qualities force other teams to have to be able to score. And you have to be able to score from the perimeter when a team has that kind of size in the paint. And that's why guard play is so important, that you have to be able to have guards that can create for themselves, can create for their teammates. You have to have guards that can shoot the ball from the perimeter, because you are collectively seeing, you know, these top teams with great presence in the paint. So you better figure out how to score from the perimeter. And I think that's an advantage for those teams. But, you know, we've seen so many teams, and, you know, Stanford with its guard play this year spread out the court, and so many. I mean, you could go down the list how many teams are spreading the court and maybe have 5 out, or they have 4 out around 1, and they pull those bigs out away from the basket so that there's a lot of cutting and action and movement, so that there's ways to combat that. But, you know, and that's, you know, when you look at the different styles of play, that's what makes it really interesting, really intriguing.
And, you know that offense is the driving force when Rutgers has three games over 80, two games over 95 back-to-back. Rutgers, Deb, see Vivian Springer coaching offense?
What's that all about?
Sure is. I had them in the double overtime game against North Carolina, 96-93, and my key for North Carolina was transition defense. Who would have ever thought that would be a key against Rutgers? I knew they were going to push and run. Brenda, they are fast. They're athletic. They're going to give everyone in the Big Ten a tough time, including Maryland. She has Coach Stringer a couple years ago. You know, they had a below 500 record. I think they won 16 and 14, and she was invited to the NIT, and she said no. The next year, which was last year, they win the NIT. She decided at that point during the summer that she did not like losing. She wanted to win, and she knew in order to win, she had to let her staff finally got to her and said, look, we've got to open it up. And I even saw them running some Princeton-like stuff. They run a little chin action. You know, when you open up the floor like that, and when you have the kind of athleticism that Rutgers has, they might and they might have the best pull-up jump shooter in the country in Tyler Scaife. And I put her jump shooting ability up against Jewel Lloyd. I think she's that good. And I think she's got that much talent. And Rutgers is going to be dangerous. But they are very offensive-minded. I ran a graphic in the game, and you guys will understand this. 2 years ago, they averaged 54 points a game. Last year, they averaged 66. This year, they're over 76. So it's definitely a big change for them, and it's a fun change. The fans love it. I know coaches are going to sell the defense and the rebounding, and you know maybe that might win you a championship game, but in order to get to the point where you can cut down the nets, you've got to have offense. And I'm going to keep preaching it and selling it. I've got T-shirts. I've got all kinds of little promotional items. And Brenda, I'll send you some. David, I'll send you some. I mean, because I'm excited about where our game is, the parity in our game, the way the game is being officiated, the way I've seen players grow their own games individually by putting the time in, because you will be rewarded. You do not have to be the tallest, the fastest, longest anymore. You have to be the most skilled. I'm not a big fan of people spending more time with a strength and conditioning coach than with their basketball coach in the summer. So that's where the rules come into play, and I'm excited about it. It's really great for our game.
You know, and Brenda, just to touch on the other side of that game, of course, the 96-93 game was a blast to watch, and, you know, we would be remiss if we were talking about great performances, not to mention the 24 rebounds that Benaja Laney had in that game, but how about North Carolina? It's great to have Sylvia Hatchell back on the sidelines. And here they sit undefeated, playing well, beat Stanford, you know, took care of business against Oklahoma State, UCLA early, and then Rutgers, not an easy schedule, lose Diamond to Shields, and they just are rolling so far and looking really impressive.
Yeah, I certainly haven't seen them as much as I'm sure Debbie has, but it is so great to see Sylvia Hatchell back on the sideline. And after the Shields leaving, to be able to have the start that they have. And, you know, we've talked about the upsets. You never know what's going to happen in an island tournament. And, you know, that's where a lot of the upsets happen. But, you know, to have North Carolina beat Stanford out there, you know, pretty convincingly out in Hawaii, and to do what they've done, you know, it's exciting to see. And there are just pockets of that all over. And I think we're just going to see so much of those kind of games because, gosh, you know, Debbie talked about the upsets in the top 10, but there are teams in the top 20 and top 25, even those in consideration, that are going to be able to produce the offense because of the way the game's officiated, because of the way people are attacking. And if you get a chance to, you know, maybe get an opponent in foul trouble or get to the free throw line or just open up the game and create some more scoring opportunities for your team, you know, that's what creates a lot of this excitement. So, you know, it's fun. I'm excited about the rest of the season, and we're off to a really good start.
Well, we are off to a really good start. And, you know, the last thing I want to do just to put a cap on this is, I want to ask each of you, so far, what you've seen, based on what you've seen, who has been a surprise to you? who has impressed you that you really think our listeners should try and keep an eye on or try and catch a game if possible if they're on television? Since you guys see so many different teams, you know, what has jumped out to each of you individually? Deb, why don't we start with you?
Well, as an AP poll voter, my poll looks a little bit different than some of the other polls. There are a couple of teams that are teams that I'd like to call surprise teams that you absolutely have to keep your eye on. One of them is South Florida. They have played a challenging non-conference schedule. Part of the reason why is they're in the American, and, you know, their biggest competition, I think, on a good night will be Connecticut. If they can hang with them for 30 minutes, I think that would be somewhat of a success for them. But they've got a player named Courtney Williams, who is a 41-inch box jump and curls off a screen unlike any other player I've ever seen. I've seen them practice. I've been following them. I've been voting for them in the AP. I think they're a very good team. Another mid-major I think you need to keep your eye on is Green Bay. I watched them for 3 days in Naples. No one's going to want to play Green Bay in the NCAA tournament. Just mark that down right now. I think that's a somewhat of a surprise, and I'm looking forward to watching those two teams. Rutgers, I've had last week before the North Carolina game, I had them at number 11 in my poll, so I was not surprised that they played that well. But when you look in the top 10 anyway, I think a lot of people might be surprised that Texas is undefeated, and at this point without Imani McGee Stafford, I think she was planning on being an integral part, even though she's been injured most on and off her whole career there. But when she's healthy at 6'7", that's a skilled 6'7" that can really play. I'm looking forward to seeing the Pac-12. We haven't mentioned them, but what a race there's going to be in the Pac-12. I have seen Oregon play. I've seen Arizona State play. Of course, I've seen Stanford. I've seen Cal. I've seen those teams. I've seen UCLA practice. I'm very excited about the Pac-12 and what team will come out of there. And Oregon State has everybody back from last year, and they're still undefeated at this point. I'm excited about the Pac-12 and looking forward to seeing what happens in that league and how many teams actually make the NCAA tournament, because Washington might have one of the best backcourts in the league.
Brenda?
Yeah, you know, and as we talked about the upsets and the games in non-conference, you know, I had the Kansas-Cal game this past weekend where Kansas pulled off the upset against Cal, and Cal, who'd been averaging 90 points a game, was held to 39 points in that game. It was not their day all the way around, and Kansas basically stopped them from running up and down the court like they had been. But to me, you know, that kind of loss early in the season, kind of like when Tennessee lost to Chattanooga and some of these other, you know, when Kentucky lost to Illinois, those are games where all of those teams are going to be really good, if not great teams, come their conference seasons and you know, down the stretch in March, et cetera, and making a play all the way through March. But sometimes teams need those kind of losses at this point in the season for the coaches to be able to, you know, get the attention and try to get everybody on the same page and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And if it's all easy during non-conference, then you don't face that to be better down the stretch. So, you know, that's, you know, a positive of some of the upsets for the teams that lose is to have those experiences. And, you know, just some teams that, you know, may be off people's radars that may or may not ever make it to the top 25, but I think will be fun to keep an eye on. Northwestern in the Big Ten is undefeated at this point. They had a big win over DePaul. Joe McEwen with that group had brought in a really strong group of freshmen a couple of years ago, and they're just getting better and better, very talented, skilled group, and I think they're going to cause some problems for some teams. And, Wichita State's going to be playing Tennessee coming up, and Wichita State has Alex Harden, who is a tremendous athlete and preseason Missouri Valley Player of the Year candidate and pre-med student. And, you know, Jody Adams has done a terrific job there at Wichita State, and former national champion Lady Vol point guard going to go back to Tennessee. You know, that that will be an interesting homecoming for Jody going back to Tennessee. But just a couple of teams that, you know, may or may not be in the top 25, but could give some teams some problems, could be those kind of teams that would be really fun to watch.
You know, just to throw a couple, add a couple on from my side is, James Madison is always fun to watch. You know, Kenny Brooks is just a great coach and always has the team playing well. And, you know, he always finds one guard to put somewhere in the top 25 in scoring every year. No matter who it is, it's a different year. There's always a guard there from James Madison that you got to watch. And, on a similar note, I think that we would be remiss if we didn't also mention, like Deb said, Green Bay is strong, and I'm going to throw Seton Hall in there. I love what's going on there. This is going to be the year for Tony Zello. This is the opportunity. The window is there. He's got a bunch of grad students on that team, and they're a really fun team to watch, up-tempo. So, and then on the other side is I just want to comment that, I think it's pretty cool seeing all the freshmen play so far this year. Not only Mitchell at Ohio State we mentioned, but Asia Wilson is playing well and had the big basket against Duke. And, how about Kia Nurse stepping in and being a starting guard at UConn? It tells you something right there about her game. And I wonder what would have happened against Notre Dame if Breonna Turner had been in there. So it's been a fun start of the season, that's for sure. And I think it's going to be great as we head closer to conference time and get back from the kids taking finals and 2015 begins. One thing is for sure, though, is that Debbie Antonelli and Brenda Van Langen are going to be on broadcasts all over the place.
Let me leave you with this, David. Western Kentucky, Louisville, and the University of Kentucky all average over 80 points a game in that state. That makes me want to watch. It's exciting, and it's something that's going to be something to keep your eye on.
Sounds good to me. I wish that Louisville Kentucky game was on right from this television from this past weekend, because I would have loved to have seen that. And, it's something. Matthew Mitchell just seems to have Jeff Walz's number. That's for sure. Brenda, thanks again for taking time. I know your schedule is tough. I appreciate you squeezing us in. Good luck to you on your recent on your future travels, and have a very, very happy holidays.
Thank you, and thanks for inviting me to be a part of it.
Deb, we know we're going to see you all over the place, too. I wish you a happy holiday season as well, to you and the family, of course, as well. And we'll talk again soon, I hope.
I hope so, David. Thank you very much. Thank you, Brenda, and I look forward to seeing you both soon.